This podcast of the Radio Cafe comes to you via radiocafe.org, where you can find more information and many other podcasts. Technical support comes from Studio X, providing website design, hosting, e-commerce, and social media marketing, serving Santa Fe to the world since 1994. Find out more at studiox.com. I'm very happy now to welcome back to the Radio Cafe Lynn Sanchez. She is with the Lifelink here in Santa Fe and their Sojourners Cafe program. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
I'm glad to have you here. And I'd also like to welcome Rose, who is an advocate for Sojourners with the Lifelink also here in Santa Fe, and Tasha, who is a survivor of human trafficking. She's also a volunteer with Sojourners. Welcome, everybody, to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So let's start with you, Lynn. Talk about the Lifelink, the Sojourners program, human trafficking here in the United States, here in New Mexico.
Our program with the Lifelink is a women's advocacy center. It's called Sojourners. We're on 4th Street in Santa Fe, and we help homeless women, and especially women with children, who are trying to find resources to get off the street, to get into the community, to find the resources that they need to build a life and be safe and be an integral part of the community. We also are a behavioral health center, the Lifelink is, and has been for over 27, 28 years. So we provide services for mental health illness, for people who have suffered trauma, for substance abuse and addictions, and also housing help. So Lifelink has over 270-some housing programs right now in the community where people are living in independently in their homes with assistance as they work towards independently being able to pay their own rent or get on their feet.
Talk about the trafficking piece specifically, because there is a march coming up, which we're going to talk about, that's happening in conjunction with the legislative session that you guys are organizing.
Right. And so because we have all of these services in place already in the community, we have been assisting human trafficking survivors since our first ones were identified when we wrote our legislation on that in 2008. And then the first victim that was identified, we started working with her, and we've worked with over 40 since that time. And what we do is we help them build a life. We help them not be re-trafficked. We help them build the internal resources and also the safety, get the safety in place so that they have a home of their own, so that they have the tools that they need to build a life, so that they can be free and healthy and thrive and have dreams and pursue them. Most every single one of them has accessed education, either through the community college or other institutions afterwards. So we're really, you know, we feel very honored to be able to help and assist them in the ways that we do.
Let's turn to you, Tasha. Tell us a little bit of your story, what happened, and how you ended up here.
I was 16, going on 17. I was actually exploited through a friend, quote-unquote. I really didn't anticipate being trafficked. She first explained to me a method of making money, and she was referring to giving people back massages. But then later on, when I was taken by a female and a male, I was put on spot and given a condom and was told to do whatever as they was referred as clients, to do whatever they would like you to do. And as long as I get the money, I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing.
Now, at that point, did you feel like you could go to somebody and say, this is happening?
Well, right after I was taken and I faked I was pregnant, and I said, I need to go home, I'm pregnant.
And so what happened then?
I went to my bed. I was screaming, yelling, crying. I threw the biggest tantrum in my life, and my parents they just thought I was having a tantrum. And I just let it build on me for like several months until I actually spoke up and said what actually happened and why I'm developing crisis acts. And I just, yeah.
Yeah. Was this going on for a while before you went home and sent and faked, you know, said faked I'm pregnant? Was that going on for a while, or did it just happen once? Or
It was quite a few times. He was actually, the guy and girl would check up on me to see what I'm doing, and a few times they did have me do it again for them. And I didn't tell anybody until like 6 months after.
Did this experience, I mean, did these people take your virginity?
No, they didn't take my virginity, but in a sense they did, because I was performing acts that were forced, and I was told if I wasn't making $15,000 to go to Las Vegas, like something would happen. But that's when I came up with a lie and said I was pregnant, and said I need to go home.
They told you you had to make $15,000?
Yeah.
In like some period of time?
In a week.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
How much, if I may ask, do you know how much these people were being charged?
Like the clients? Like,
yeah.
It would go from 100 to 500 just for one session.
So then you went home. Eventually you spoke up. What happened then?
6 months later, I received help, more so mentally. Well, not even. I was still being treated like a criminal.
I mean, that's part of the thing that we hear over and over again, and I think you, Lynn, and I have talked about this in the past, is that this should be treated for what it is, namely statutory rape. These women are not necessarily even at the age of consent, girls, and yet you're treated as criminals. Were you treated that way by the police, by the authorities?
Yes, I was. Yeah.
And when you explained to them the coercive part of it, did they hear it?
They started to understand for an extent. I found out that my mom was working with someone, and they noticed my behavior was changing, but there wasn't much that could be done, I guess. So
they probably just really didn't understand what was happening fully.
I mean, I think the thing is, this is a problem. The idea that human trafficking is about bringing people in from far away, whether it be Romania or Russia or whatever, and the non-understanding that it's happening right here, and people aren't even moving from one point to another. I mean, this was, Tasha, in your case, right in your hometown.
Yeah.
And that's pretty common.
Yeah, I guess 16 and under, you're at risk.
Yeah.
Yeah, you start to be at risk.
Now, when did you get to the point where you decided to leave and go somewhere else? Did you hear about Santa Fe, or how did you end up here?
I actually have an aunt that lives in Albuquerque, and my grandparents actually take vacations out here. It's kind of a spur of the moment. I don't know, because within that year, I didn't have my parents' trust. I had tickets. I was getting in trouble a lot with the police, and it was just time for a change.
Human trafficking, human sexual trafficking of girls, of teenagers, is happening all over the world, all over the country, and in New Mexico. Tell us about the New Mexico piece.
It is happening in New Mexico. People are always asking me, how many? You know, how much is this going on? How often is this happening? How many victims are there? We've worked with 40 victims so far, a little over 40 at the LifeLink. But I know there's a few cases going on right now in the state of New Mexico that they're, you know, gathering evidence on, and they're going to be going to trial. But I don't really think the numbers are as important as the fact that even one person is too many, that it can happen in every community, that there's so many different forms of trafficking. People can be trafficked by children or trafficked by their parents. children are, you know, teenagers are trafficked by boyfriends, by, you know, their friends or gangs. And there's so many different ways that trafficking occurs. It is the fastest growing crime. It's second only to drug trafficking.
Yeah, drug trafficking and human trafficking, right. Two huge pieces of organized crime.
Mm-hmm. But it can be organized crime too. It can be, you know, these well-run organizations who are, you know, doing an international or a national crime ring where they're, you know, moving girls around or men to boys, children. Or it can be, you know, like I said, it can take a lot of different forms. There's a lot of different ways people get trafficked.
In your case, Tasha, was it part of a larger organized crime or these people that brought you in?
I can't say. They moved on to bigger places, so I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. Let's turn to you, Rose. How did you get involved in this work yourself?
Well, I came to Santa Fe about 8 years ago. I was 17, going on 18, and I had recently gotten out of treatment down in Las Cruces. Treatment for alcohol. I had gotten in trouble from my reservation, and they really didn't know how to deal with my situation as far as being an adolescent and at risk. So they sent me to Las Cruces, and within that time, they didn't really know where else to place me after I got out, and my family didn't think it was safe enough for me to go back to Albuquerque. So I ended up here in Santa Fe at their youth shelter, which I then waited for a placement with their transitional living program. Once I got in, I was there for about 2 months, and then they kicked me out because of my continued alcohol abuse. And when I got kicked out, they pretty much just kicked me out. They didn't really hook me up with nowhere to go after that or give me any kind of resources around, you know, being here in Santa Fe. And I didn't know Santa Fe very well. So I called the only person at that time that I knew who lived here, which was an ex-boyfriend of my mother's. I lived with him for about a couple weeks, and just at that time, I was trying to keep up with school. I had a part-time job at, you know, the Santa Fe Place Mall, trying to do school as much as I could. I was a senior at the time, and then it became too hard. I dropped out. I became homeless, and at that time, it was a little, luckily when I went homeless, it was spring. So, you know, it was pretty warm, but, you know, there were no resources for youth around at that time. Now there are a couple programs out here in Santa Fe that, you know, deal with at-risk youth, homeless youth, or at-risk homelessness. But at that time, there was nothing around as far as, you know, shelters go for youth or, you know, anybody who is under 21. So I pretty much mingled with the people on the streets, you know, all the bums you see downtown, all the panhandlers you see downtown, you know, that kind of became my circle of friends. And at that time, everybody was, you know, hanging down at Cathedral Park, drinking, drugging, and you saw a large portion of underage youth. Usually, I would say from 15 to 18, and then you have men down there that are well into their 40s, 50s, you know, hanging out with these kids downtown, buying them alcohol, sharing their drugs. So that was kind of how I was exposed to what had been going on, you know, here in Santa Fe. I got into trouble as far as, you know, my drinking and drugging went, and actually got court ordered to sign up with the LifeLink. When I got there, I was at that time their youngest client.
How old were you by then?
I was going to be 18. And I kind of got discouraged. And one of the ladies that I was working with through youth shelters, through the outreach program, had referred me to Lynn Sanchez. She's kind of the one that, I guess, you know, got me off the street, got me an apartment pretty quick because it was getting cold. You know, I was a young lady at that time that didn't really know what to do. But that was pretty much how I got into the LifeLink program. I'm still a client, and I also am an advocate for them, for other young women here in Santa Fe or who come through Santa Fe.
What was it like for you to then enter into a process of, I assume that you really had to make a commitment to sobriety?
At that time, I didn't really think of it as a commitment to sobriety, because I didn't. I was still pretty heavy into my drug use and my alcoholism. It just gave me a place to go as far as the housing part went. And even then, you know, you have those same associations from the street. So it's like, hey, guys, I got a house. Let's go to my house now and, like, party, you know. And even then, they have their friends. And these aren't just people from Santa Fe. These are people coming, you know, traveling from out of state, through the state. You know, this is kind of just a pit stop for them. And I think that's the common background to a lot of these cases, is because they prey on young kids who are at risk for drug abuse or substance abuse, alcohol abuse, depression. You know, a lot of broken homes that are here in Santa Fe, they find refuge down either downtown, where drugs are easily accessible, alcohol is easily accessible, and, you know, they prey on these kids. And, you know, none of these people have roots anywhere. So they're like, you know what, you want to leave? I'll take you with me. And it's as easy as that. It's like pretty much handing candy out to a grown child and be like, I'll take you with me and we'll go do this and we'll go do that. And I've had so many opportunities to do that, but I didn't trust myself. And I'm still kind of that way till this day. Like, I don't trust myself to a certain extent. And I think that's one thing that's kind of helped me during those times was, yeah, I could go with you, but, like, what am I going to do? Like, if I didn't have a plan, that I couldn't see no outcome to it. And I think that's what stopped me most of the time. And a lot of these kids nowadays, they don't have a plan, let alone a goal to reach as far as, you know, being sustainable or having some high self-esteem or even having a sort of self-esteem. So I think that's an underlying issue as far as, like, being proactive for youth around Santa Fe, and not even Santa Fe, but New Mexico.
Now, these people who might say to you, you know, I'm just passing through, come with me, you know, and they might prey on a young person like you. What's in it for them?
Company. You know, you could be their kind of like guinea pig. If you're agreeing, first of all, to go with them, they're already thinking you're naive and weak. You know, they don't know you, you don't know them, and you're going to trust them to go with them. So now they're at that point thinking, okay, well, she came with me or they came with me. I bet you I can go get them to stand on that corner and panhandle for me. And for me, being homeless, panhandling, or they call it spanging, you know, that's hard for me, like, even if I wanted to. Like, my pride hurts so bad just even asking anybody for money. And I think if your self-esteem is already so low that you're going to go and, you know, do what you're asked by this stranger, then they think it's not a problem. And then they just keep feeding on that. And next thing you know it, they're like, all right, go to this house and, you know, please these people and see how much money you can get out of it. And then, there's so many ways around it. And, you know, and then they could bribe them, be like, oh, well, I'll give you $50 if you go do this. Or, you know, if you do this for me, I'll give you $100. Or I'll feed you. Or I'll give you a place to stay. You know, it's easy as that. Little things that people look for that they can't get at home, they're going to try to get somewhere else. Kind of the same conception about people joining the gang. They don't have no support in their family or their household, so they're going to go to the streets for it. Same concept.
So now you were in this, you had your own place, but you were still using it with these friends that you'd made and drinking and drugging, as you were talking about. What happened next? Was there a transition where you kind of got out of that?
I had gotten into a really bad relationship with some intense domestic abuse. And during that process, I got pregnant. And that's pretty much where I was like, all right, I kind of have to stop doing all these shenanigans. This is bigger than me. You know, being pregnant is one thing that really kind of like where I had to stop, you know, and stop crossing lines that I wasn't supposed to be crossing and kind of just, you know, wake up in a way. And, you know, I was 20 when I got pregnant, but still, that's, you know, that was young for me considering that I wasn't even planning on having kids. But it took me a while. It definitely took me a while to realize that I had to change. And that meant like cutting people off, you know, avoiding certain areas of Santa Fe. Even the bus. I just stopped taking some buses because of the people I run into. So, I mean, there are other different factors, but I think that's the biggest factor is the fact that I got pregnant and I had to seek some sort of help. And luckily, the support that I still had from the LifeLink was still there. And I mean, that's probably the biggest. But then again, like, I myself as a person am really ambitious. So going back to school was another thing that I had in the back of my mind of a benefit of stopping the drinking and the drugging.
And so what happened after that?
Well, after I got my daughter, after I had my daughter, I kind of fell back into the same cycle as far as like the domestic abuse went. It wasn't physical anymore, but it was a lot of verbal and mental abuse. And I actually, I went to jail because of a domestic abuse case against my daughter's dad. And I went to jail for a long time. And that's kind of like, was another wake up call. Even though he was the father of my child, you know, I kind of had to make those boundaries with him. And I don't have a lot of trust for this town, especially the people in it. I'm gonna just put that out there, but it, you know, I had to cut a lot of people off, and it was pretty much everybody. And like till this day, like I probably only have like two friends, and they don't even live in town no more. But going away for that long, I kind of had, you know, I had time to think. I had, you know, I have a lot of stuff going for myself, and I had to really think about what I was doing at that time, and how I was gonna break away from it all and say no to this, and you know, accept some things. So I think a lot of therapy and a lot of my work in the community is what kind of helped me through it.
Do you have your daughter?
I do. She's 5 now. She'll be 6 in May. She's a kindergartner.
Now, you said you're very ambitious. What are your goals? What would you like to do?
So I've been attending the Santa Fe Community College for on and off for about 4 years. Right now, I'm in their sustainable tech program. I'm working in the biofuels, water conservation, and water treatment departments. So when I'm done, my associates will be in applied science. Main goal is to be self-sustainable and off the grid while implementing youth in these kind of programs. And that's kind of what got me started is because I found a program, or actually Lynn found a program for me, and she set up an interview for me, and I went to the interview, and this was when Earthworks Institute was still around, and their environmental conservation program that worked with at-risk youth, and they're government-funded, were government-funded, and they find youth who are either staying in shelters, who had been, you know, kicked out of school and don't really have any alternative resources, and youth who are young parents who need an income. So I was working with this program, and what we did watershed restoration out in Cerritos Hills, and we did small construction projects for the different elementary schools here in the Santa Fe County District. And we would build like outside gardens, build benches, shade structures. So it was kind of like a program where you were taught the trade of construction, but also learning about environmental conservation and raising awareness about climate change. So that's kind of got what got me focused, because I was a general engineer major. I didn't really know what kind of engineering I wanted to do, but I was going in that direction somewhat. And just going through these different programs, I just recently got out of the AmeriCorps program, and I worked with EarthCare New Mexico, and they're also another environmental steward program. So just, you know, a lot of these youth-driven programs is kind of what got me thinking about not only the environment, because, you know, being Native American, I grew up on the land, and that's how I was taught. And to see today how much technology has impacted our youth and how distracted they are from the outside world beyond technology is kind of, you know, giving me that drive to bring it back. So, you know, I plan to go, and right now I'm really interested in the industrial hemp bill that's being put through legislature now. Hopefully they pass it, because Susana Martinez vetoed it, saying that it wasn't up to federal regulations, when in fact it was quoted by the federal regulations of the hemp industry. So I'm really excited to see where that goes and start, you know, my alternative goal, the goal I'm pushing for is to cultivate industrial hemp and turn it into use it as a biofuel. Let's get away from fracking and, you know, the coal industry. It's destroying our planet, and right, you know, that's really what I want, you know, to get us off of, you know, off the grid, growing, you know, surviving off the land that we have, you know, and just improving it for our children, for the generations that are going to come, because they're going to inherit it. So that's what my ultimate goal as far as my school goes.
Let's turn back to you, Tasha. Let's talk a little bit more, if you don't mind, about the process that you went through once you were here in Santa Fe and got involved with the LifeLink, and the whole healing process that you had to go through, which I imagine would be really quite a process, because there are so many betrayals involved in what you went through.
Yeah, kind of similar to Rose. I was court ordered to come to Santa Fe to go to LifeLink and seek help mentally, and yeah.
Yeah. And what was that like for you?
It was a major game changer. It was definitely different, because I've never really asked for help or received help. So just to have such a good program out here to help people, just to be stable mentally in trauma work with human trafficking, that itself is a really big piece, because to me, if it wasn't acknowledged, I'd probably still be insane.
Yeah. Now, do you have any hopes or goals or dreams for what you'd like to do as an adult?
Yes. I'm also attending the community college as well. I'm going for my AA, Applied Arts and Human Services, and hopefully just to keep on going up from there.
Do you have a desire to help other girls who've been through what you've been through?
Yes. Yep. That's my plan, to help other human trafficking victims, especially those who are at risk at youth, or, you know, survivors, victims, that kind of stuff.
Lynn Sanchez, let's talk about the march that's coming up. There is tomorrow, Friday, a march. The Freedom Walk?
It's a Freedom Walk.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Tell us about it.
It's a Freedom Walk to raise awareness and social response to the issue of modern-day slavery, which is human trafficking. It's an outcry for freedom against oppression. It's an outcry for freedom against modern-day slavery. It's an outcry against, you know, we talked earlier about how sometimes victims of trafficking are criminalized because it's misunderstood. Or also because we just don't have any other systems in place that help, especially if it's youth, you know, they end up going to detention centers or getting put in child protective services, which is not really rights-based. We're walking to raise awareness about the issue of human trafficking, and every sort of economic, social, political, and other systems that create injustices. and oppression. So walk with us to raise awareness and support for all marginalized, enslaved, and oppressed people in our community and around the globe. And I think this is a good way to show solidarity for the victims of human trafficking and also those who are still in bondage today around the globe. There's more slavery today in the world than there was during the Atlantic slave trade. So that's what this walk is about, just to raise awareness that this is happening.
Tasha, you have something to read, which is basically how people who don't know much about this subject might recognize, for example, somebody like you who needs help, who is in their circle. What are some of these signs?
Well, first, just to get a clarification on human smuggling, it's when from a different country, people bring in aliens, which are people that are not undocumented, over to the United States. And versus human trafficking, one of the indicators you might ask or see, the victim possession of identification and travel documents, they don't have control of the documents themselves. So for instance, their partner will keep them and won't have their ID, their state ID. And another indicator would be, was the victim coached on what to say to law enforcement and immigration officials? Another one would be, was the victim forced to perform sexual acts? Does the victim have freedom of movement? So those are just a few that I've seen on the indicator list.
Yeah.
So that are pretty important.
Yeah.
And are good to ask other individuals.
Much more to talk about, but it is time to go. I want to thank all three of you very much for being with us on the Radio Cafe. And if people would like more information, they can go to thelifelink.org. Lynn Sanchez, Tasha, and Rose, thank you for being with us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the podcast. To support the program, you can go to radiocafe.org. Many thanks to StudioX.com for their technical support and web design.